Hi, VoiceOver Body Shop coming up in just a minute. Our guest tonight is
Peter K. O'Connell.
Hey, you got it right. And we're going to talk about voiceover marketing. We've got some video about headphones and another news item from VoiceOver Extra. So, hey, don't go away. Be right here for VoiceOver Body Shop in about 10 seconds or so.
Two men, twin sons from different mothers, with a passion for voiceover recording technology and the desire to make recording easy for voice actors everywhere, together in one place. George Whittam, the home studio engineer to the stars, a Virginia Tech grad with an unmatched knowledge of all the latest gear and technology in voiceover today. Dan Leonard, the home studio master, a voice actor with over 30 years' experience in broadcasting and recording, and a no-holds-barred, myth-busting attitude for teaching you how easy it is. Together, finally, to bring you all the latest technology, the superstars of voiceover today, and leading the discussion on how to make the most of your voiceover business. This is VoiceOver Body Shop. And now, live from their super-secret multimedia studio in Sherman Oaks, California, here are George Whittam and Dan Leonard.
Well, if you haven't figured it out yet, I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop.
Or V-O-B-S. And tonight, a great show coming up. Peter
Indeed.
O'Connell's going to be our guest. We're going to talk about voiceover marketing and stuff. But first, we have to thank our sponsors.
Of course.
They're very, very important. Very important people. Otherwise, this would just be a blue screen if you were watching right now. But we need to thank Harlan Hogan over at VoiceOverEssentials.com, VoiceOver Extra, Edge Studio, your employers, Source Elements, and VO2GoGo, and Uncle Roy over at Antland Productions.
Thanks, buddies.
Thanks, guys. It's a big help. It makes this show happen. Yeah, you can run the news.
Okay.
And now, the VoiceOver Extra, VOBS News, the latest and most comprehensive voiceover industry news, brought to you live.
All righty, it's time for the VoiceOver Extra News. Penny Audies and client retention. If the name Penny Absher brings a smile to you, you're likely that you met her at one of the five fabulous voice conferences where she was co-executive producer with James Allberger. Or perhaps you trained with Penny at the Voice Acting Academy where she partnered with James. Or maybe you read her book, Demo and Marketing Magic for Voice Actors. Or you're receiving frequent positive vibes from Penny's Positive Thinkers Unite group, which has grown to over 2,000 members. Well, Penny is smiling today, too, as she announces her retirement from VoiceOver. I'm so grateful for my friendship and partnership with James, she says. It's been the kind of creative union I never imagined could exist. She adds she's also blessed to have had the association with many VoiceOver students and so many other people in the industry. Well, the VoiceOver industry today returns all those compliments and thank yous to Penny for her energy and guidance over the years. VoiceOver Extra in particular is especially grateful for the enthusiasm Penny and James expressed for the idea, 24-hour news and resources way over back in 19-whatever-that-was-year. with an additional nod from Don LaFontaine and others that at that convention, VoiceOver Extra launched a few months later. Best wishes to Penny and her husband Lee as they move into an RV, I guess. Also
really?
Worth mentioning today, yes, the Audio Publishers Association announced the finalists for the Audiobook of the Year, and the APA's Audio Awards finalists are The Girl on the Train, Go Set a Watchman, The Nightingale, and The Water Diviner. You can read the competition's judges' comments about the finalists and see finalists in all 25 categories of this year's Audio Awards now on
VoiceOverExtra.com.
Thank you very much.
Actually.
As a compliment to tonight's chat with voiceover marketing expert Peter K. O'Connell, check out the latest article on VoiceOver Extra from VoiceOver Pro Jason McCoy, who will talk about how to get clients as well.
And here's some of the points.
Okay. Do an outstanding job. Ask questions. Keep in touch. And make it easy for them to work with you again.
Nice.
You can read how Jason does this, plus hundreds more articles at VoiceOver Extra, your one-stop resource for all your voiceover news.
I love it when the teleprompter is running too fast. That's the awesome. That was awesome, dude.
It's like I used to run a teleprompter when I was interning back at Channel 2 in Buffalo.
It was awesome.
And it's like, it's going just a little bit fast. And
we're flying totally solo tonight, or duo tonight, so we didn't have someone to operate the teleprompter.
Yeah, but really.
That was a lot of fun to watch.
I could have just said, hey, Jake, get in here and touch that. But we didn't do that.
Anyway, good stuff. Congratulations to her.
She's a great lady. She really is. And it was always wonderful to go because you'd get a good hug.
Yeah.
That was one of the best things about meeting Penny at those sorts of things. But we are going to talk about marketing. And we have a tech question here, I believe, from a really funny guy who's been on our show.
That's right.
What does Chris ask? Chris Hewart has a question.
His question is, hey, George, question for the show. This week I recorded with two different mics at the same time, a U87 and a Manly Reference.
How manly.
How manly, yes. Two $3,000-ish microphones.
Yeah.
When I play them back at the same time, my voice really cuts through because of the vocal characteristics of both mics. I thought that was a question. Did something get cut off? No, that's it. That's all I got.
I guess
he's wondering why. Why does it cut through, maybe? What you're doing is when you're recording with two mics simultaneously, there's a few things that happens. You can have all kinds of good and bad things can happen. The bad things that usually happen is when the two microphones aren't placed correctly, one microphone is slightly behind or in front of the other, and you get phasing, as you were saying. Phasing is like when one microphone's just the wrong distance away, the sound that reaches that microphone is out of phase from the other mic. So the two waveforms meet like halfway.
It almost sounds like a Doppler effect.
Yeah, Doppler or a kind of a, I don't know, it's kind of hard to describe it. It's a phasey sound. Well, like, for example, Dan and I are both on, we're both working mics here really close to each other. If we talk to them.
Let's see what happens.
Yeah, like for right now, you can hear my voice. I'm hearing myself sort of in a diffuse way because the sound that's reaching this mic is slightly delayed from this mic.
Wow.
That's actually a really good example. As I bring this mic better and I aim them away from each other, all of a sudden you hear my voice come into focus. It gets more full and more rich. That's what often happens, is the bottom end is what ends up getting lost. It gets canceled out.
That's right.
In Chris's particular case, I'm assuming he added more information. Good. Oh. Thank you. I'm assuming that he means that if he has the mic set correctly, then those two waveforms will meet and create a thicker, fuller sound.
Right.
And that can be pretty amazing. It's not a technique I've actually decided to make use of.
Right.
But it's something that if you have the setup to do so, it could be an interesting experiment.
Now, isn't there a thing called phase cancellation that you can use to turn that off?
Well, there's a phase reverse switch on some systems. Some mixing consoles or high-end mic preamps that have more than one channel will have a button that looks like a zero with a line through it. If you see, or some microphones have it too.
Yes.
If you see that, you can flick that switch and it will flip one microphone out of phase. And when you listen to it, I got to stop hitting this. When you listen to talking away with my hands, why they wear lav mics on TV.
I know. You're hanging out with me too much.
Yeah. So when the two mics join together, they can create new interesting things. And when you flip one out of phase, the sound can improve or get worse. But he says, would you recommend sending out auditions and work in this manner?
No.
Well, basically, no. I mean, I think it's a little insane to try to do that every time. But if you have the gear and you have the time to mess around and you think the end result sounds better, that's fine. But keep in mind, you are now representing that is your sound. So that means everything you're going to record from that point on, you need to match that and continue using that same setup. So if you want to rely on two microphones for every job that you do and go through that production flow, that'd be my guess. It's just not something I would want to do. It's like making your job harder than it already is.
That's true.
And you don't need more gear and distractions to keep you from acting.
I mean, if you've
got a lot to think about.
Yeah, if you've got a U87 and a Manly Reference, why would you want to compare them? They're both really good mics. They're probably more than you need for voiceover, unless you're in a really good professional studio. And I assume Chris has a really nice studio.
Yeah.
But if you have both, they're not something you try to use simultaneously. I mean, maybe he was going for a stereo effect or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that would be a more interesting thing to do. If you want to create a thicker, wider sound, you would pan one mic left and one mic right, have them right in front of you, and when you speak, you will sound slightly larger than life, you know. But these are all just experimental production techniques that you can have fun with.
Right.
And the bottom line is, if it sounds good, it is good.
That's right. But for just dry single-track voice, a little bit much.
You know, everybody has production secrets, especially people that do stuff for radio. They've got weird things they do. I wouldn't be surprised if somebody actually does that.
Oh.
You know, but these are secrets that people try and use. And, you know, for your day-to-day VO, commercial work, probably a little crazy to try to.
Probably best, though, if you have a good microphone, you want to use two microphones, probably best to have a matching microphone.
Probably. It depends what the effect you're going for.
That's true.
There's actually a couple odd mics out there that have two microphones inside.
Yeah.
Like one, they'll have a dynamic mic and a condenser mic, for example. Right. Audio Technica makes one. The mics have to be perfectly aligned for phase. As long as you have them perfectly aligned for phase, it can sound nice. Slightly out of whack, and you get this
sort of thing.
This diffuse sort of hollow sounding sound that's not very pleasing.
Okay.
So don't do that.
All right. Good question. If anybody else has a technical question about home voiceover studios, throw them in the chat room, and maybe we can get some people on Zoom if they're gutsy enough.
Yeah, if you're brave enough.
If you're brave enough.
We can put the Zoom link in the chat, and some of you guys can jump in later to ask Peter some questions.
Right, or us, or all of us.
Yeah, that's right.
Anyway, Peter O'Connell is going to be joining us in a minute, but you had an interesting experience this weekend.
I did.
Something that I don't think anybody outside of Southern California would know this kind of stuff goes on.
Yeah, I went to Can Jam.
Oh,
and
wow.
I have a package, so you'll find out what it's all about.
Do tell.
We'll run at the end of the show because I don't want to stretch out the beginning of the show too long and make you guys bored. But it's a really cool little package I shopped together showing how microphones and headphones work together to measure the sound of a pair of headphones.
Wow.
It's kind of interesting, I thought. If you like audio and you like technology, you might find it interesting. But that'll be at the end of the show.
I still like my Bob Marley little wooden earplugs things. They work great.
You know what? With headphones, there's no accounting for taste. Some people love really bright, shiny headphones. Some people like very dull, accurate headphones.
Right.
And I heard of probably 30 or 40 headphones, and they were all a little bit different. It was a fun thing to check out.
Interesting. All right. Well, changing our formatics a little bit, you get to talk about Source Connect.
All right. You got it, man. So one of our great sponsors of the show, one that we're going to talk about tonight live for you, and they're really been one of our – since the beginning of our new format here on the show in VOBS, they've been here with us, and that's Source Elements. And they create Source Connect. Source Connect is an amazing technology that can allow you to stream audio in real time between studios. It is very high quality. The signal maintains integrity. It never drifts out of sync. You don't lose any change. There's no change in quality. It stays absolutely consistent. That's Source Connect Standard and Source Connect Pro. These are the softwares that are being adopted by many studios that currently use ISDN and need to have a backup for their more and more oft dropping out ISDN connections as the network and the systems are getting older. So if you want to be up to speed with what the top studios are using now as their ISDN alternative or their backup, you should probably be checking out Source Connect. They've also got some new stuff coming out in the next month or two, which we'll be introducing on the show. That should be pretty exciting. So stay tuned here because we'll probably get an exclusive on the new things that Source Connect is coming or Source Elements is coming out with. I know some people there pretty well, so we get some inside track. It's kind of fun. But anyway, if you want to check out Source Connect, go to sourceelements.com and you can sign up for a 15-day free trial. And while you're there, go check out their new free service called Source Connect Now and give that a shot. Thanks a lot, Source Elements. We appreciate your support of our show, VOBS. And we will be right back right after this.
Every Monday, 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific.
Voiceover Body Shop. I love when they talk BS about you.
Hiya, VO friends. You say you ain't booked a VO gig in 7 years? And your demo is so old that you can hear the clicks from the stock music records? and you hear so much tape hiss that you run to the sink to see if the faucet is running. And the engineer used so much echo on your voice that it sounds like it was recorded in the Grand Canyon. And the scripts seem a bit dated, too, advertising the new and improved 1938 Plymouth Road King. Is that what's been troubling you, Bunky?
Well, lift your head up high and take a walk in the sun. Your demo can be killer, too. Just contact Uncle Roy at AtlantProductions.com and book yourself a shiny new killer demo. Show your stick-to-itiveness and show the world. You'll never give up, never give up, never give up. That dream.
Learning never ends.
You continue to grow.
Edge Studio has grown. Pursue multiple disciplines in tandem and grow your career. We've added new courses in a new curriculum.
We picked the best coaches from the community of working voice actors.
A new technology division, engineering and consulting, led by George Whittam.
Follow your dream.
Sign up for advanced learning or register for an introduction to voice acting or foundation studies program.
See it all now
at thenewedgestudio.com.
You're watching VOBS.TV. I don't know why. It's crazy what they do here. I think I'm going to go somewhere else and have a cheese sandwich.
And we're back here on VoiceOver Body Shop. And I'd like to welcome our guest tonight, a good friend of mine back from the old country. From Buffalo, New York, a tremendous expert on marketing and public relations and a great voice actor in his own right, Peter K. O'Connell. Welcome to VoiceOver Body Shop.
In his own mind, well, or welcome back, as it were.
Right. You were there in the earlier incarnation of our show.
Oh, terribly
the earliest, earliest incarnation of the show.
Early, like the Indian chief test pattern early.
Like, and it was a totally, totally different show, completely
totally
unrelated to the show.
First of all, you're in color, so there's that.
So how are things on the old homestead there?
Oh, well, we miss you terribly here in the Nickel City, but things here in Buffalo are doing well. We had some spring and some snow today, so that's good. And other than that, life is just ducky. People are making money, including me, and so that's really all that matters.
Yeah. Well, that's great. That's great. Now, we also started...
We miss you. We miss you at our meetup, though. We do miss you at our meetups.
Yes. We Peter and I started Leslie Diamond started a great group in Buffalo called Herd Around Buffalo.
That's a great name.
sitting in a restaurant, Leslie and I are like, how about Herd Around Buffalo? It made sense. But yes, but it was a lot of fun, and we would meet like once a month. Everybody should be doing this, by the way. And you should, if you live in a locality and you have a couple other people doing voiceover, starting a meetup group is a great thing to do because you can talk about marketing and run scripts.
It's awesome because it helps everybody just, you know, first of all, get out of the house, which is nice. Yeah. And you know, talk with people who are of the same ilk and of the same, background. And all, you know, all credit to both FAFCON and also Doug Drakel, who when I was in Miami for a trip, invited me over to his, at that time was a mastermind group, and I got to see that firsthand with Mindy Bear and Jackie Bales was in it, and Zurich, and I'm probably forgetting somebody else, and I'm sorry about that, but it was a great group, and you know, and I always wanted to do it, but I said to Leslie and to Dan, I said, you know, we need to do this. This must be done. You two go start it. Because you two, you guys have the free time. I got the three kids. I can't start it. I've got the idea. Go forth. And they did. And I've been grateful to them ever since.
Yeah. It was great when we would meet at Leslie's house because she had a beautiful house.
Yeah. Oh, the palace. Oh, we missed the palace.
It was nice. It was nice. So we had people all over going, what the heck are they talking about? But. If you have a meetup group,
it's great because we have people and still have people coming in from Canada, coming in from northern Pennsylvania, and further east out of New York State. I mean, people would come all over the place to come to the meetup, and hopefully still will.
And it was a great time, and we would just go until the late hours of the night and have a great time. We did improv and ran scripts, and a talented bunch of people there.
But yep. And we talked marketing.
We did.
Oh, was that a segue?
I was about to go there, but anyway, but your expertise really is in marketing, and a well-respected person in talking about voiceover marketing. Why do you think business owners, especially in our case, voice actors, why is it that, you know, why do you think that, or in this case, voice talents who own their own businesses are so afraid of marketing?
Because it's too much like work.
It's more than just the voiceover. It's actual work.
They're like, what? This is a business. My hands are going to get dirty. I think it goes back to the concept of it being a business, a voiceover actually being something that is more than just performance. And there's a lot more involved to every business. You know, if you own a bakery, you know, you're going to bake, but you're also going to have to do the bills and get the people in the door, put the sign up there, make sure the taxes get paid. It's all the stuff of running a business. And marketing is scary because marketing is individual. Marketing is what works for Dan, may not work for Peter, may not work for Patrick Sweeney, may not work for Doug Turkel. There, you know, everybody has not only a unique brand within themselves, but also an audience and a voice and sort of a reputation and needs to market directly to that. So there is no perfect answer, and there is no algebraic equation for it. And because there's all these variables scare people. You know, business owners don't want to take risks, and marketing is about risk. There are degrees of risk, like there are degrees of risk in investing. If you buy an investment portfolio, you can buy moderate risk, you can buy low risk, you can buy high risk. You know, with marketing, there's some similar points to that fact. But I think overall, if you can organize yourself a little bit, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, as we go on, you'll feel a little bit better about life. I think it is the variables. I think it is the lack of focus that business owners have. Again, that's for voiceover talents. That's for any business. It truly is. The same fear that a voiceover talent has about doing marketing, whether they're doing the right thing, and is it the right one? Is this what I should be doing? Is this correct? Is the same thing that a CPA has, is the same thing that any business consultant has in their business.
Have you ever seen any creative CPA marketing stuff?
A little bit, yeah. I think the idea with a business like that is when you show your fun. Yeah. Not only, obviously with CPAs, you want to show a level of responsibility. But I think what makes someone stand out then in that marketplace is to show responsibility and in some sort of fun way. Whether they put on, just a silly hat, or they make fun of their industry being boring and all buttoned up. And, you know, I'm a really good CPA, but I do it in a Hawaiian plaid shirt, you know, that type of thing. Just to make people feel at ease. But also, it's a point of difference, isn't it? Because you're not going to find a lot of CPAs who do anything that shows a level of creativity. They're all going to kind of show in a tie, sitting at a desk, a very clean desk. I remember a teacher in high school had a sign on his desk, and because his desk was always cluttered. He said, if a cluttered desk is the sign of a cluttered mind, what is the sign of an empty desk? So, you know, when you're doing a commercial for a CPA, you're all neat and tidy. You're like going, but I've been to CPA's offices. I expect there to be a little bit of clutter, you know, organized fine, but you got piles,
right.
you got 20 people dumping their piles on your desk. You got to deal with that.
Especially this time of year.
So,
too.
You know, oh goodness. And so I think there's an opportunity for everybody to stand out and be a little bit creative, tweak it a little bit to stand out. And I think you have to do that in voiceover too.
Absolutely.
You know, it's just, we can't all be, the voice of choice, because everybody's the voice of choice. And we can't all be just friendly, or we all can't all be just, the booming voice, because there's 12 or 1300 other people who are marketing themselves that way. The question is, who are they marketing themselves to, and what's the rest of the message?
Good point. Good thing I dropped that voice of choice thing about 6-7 years ago. Do we make marketing just a little bit too complicated for ourselves? I mean, I'm intimidated by it. And, you know, we've had a lot of people on the show talking about, oh, I send out letters to all of my clients and I send them birthday greetings and then I send them a quote every day. I'm like, crap, I'm not going to do all that stuff. And is that going to get me more business? Do we make it too complicated or is there a simpler way to do it?
I think we do make it too complicated, and the complication is based on our own fear and our own feelings of inadequacy about doing this sort of stuff. And I think our friend Chris Nichter, Dan, back when he was coming out of radio and through the ether into voiceover, and we had that long conversation, and he said, "Well, I'm going to start my," and he's doing very well now, by the way, so yes, I can tell the story on his behalf, or maybe I can't, but he's not watching. he said, I've got to get this website perfect. I get my business cards perfect. And when I get all these 12 things in a row lined up, then I'm going to go out. And what was Dan, do you remember my answer to him?
Not exactly.
That's all right. It's kicking. If you wouldn't drink before the show, we wouldn't have this problem. The answer was just do it. And he would throw out, but I got to do just do it. Just and he would it, try right. and get a sentence out and I would just say, just do it.
Right.
Stop worrying about perfection. Pull the trigger. Do it. People aren't going to know whether your marketing is perfect. People aren't going to know whether it's, you know, it's absolutely great. I know you want to get things done in a way to make sure it goes fairly successfully. And I get that part about it. I'm not saying be sloppy, but I'm saying don't wait on everything to line up perfectly to execute your marketing plan. It probably won't. Just do it.
Yeah. And it worked for him. You know, Chris is a talented guy and, you know, he was launched into voiceover full time by, you know, just by employment situation, but he was very worried.
By a boot.
Yeah, after 25 years on the same radio station, that can drive you a little bit batty. But no, he's doing great, and that was great advice. You just got to sort of do it. What are two or three marketing tools that voice talents need to have any shot at really being effective in this really chaotic industry?
Courage would be a good one. and a pretty good savings account. Those would be two really good marketing tools to have with you going into the voiceover business. I think the biggest one, and the one I stress with everybody and have for years, and some of the people in the chat rooms, et cetera, have heard me say this before, so I apologize for repeating myself, but clearly the message is not getting out, so I'll just say it one more time. It's a plan. It's a marketing plan. It's not a difficult document. Damn. It can be a document that you want to put together in any form you want, whether it's an Excel spreadsheet or whether it's a Word document. However you learn, everybody learns differently. But give yourself a roadmap of how you want the year to go, and start with the months of the year. And then break it down into marketing channels. Now, that's a very, very expensive word, marketing channels. And when you work with a guy like me, I'm going to charge you thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to show you what marketing channels are. But just because I'm on TV, and I, of course, like Dan, have been drinking heavily, you know, promotional placement water, through before the show, I will tell you just a few of those little tricks. You know, a marketing channel could be something like an email blast. A marketing channel could be something like networking events. A marketing channel could be something like direct mail piece. And suddenly, you know, just saying those words out loud, you go, well, I've done email blasts, or I've written a postcard or a letter. That's a channel. And you figure out how many of those you want to do a year, or if you just want to do one, that's all fine. Then you divine where you want to, what audience you want to go to, which gets to, and market to, which gets to the second item that you probably need a tool that you need more than anything else in marketing, I think anyway. And I'm not, you know, everyone calls me an expert and a guru, and I'm not.
Well, you're just, you know, willing just to talk about it, doing I think, this a long time, more importantly than anything else.
Well, yeah, and the important, the second important thing I would say is a database. Now that is another, you know, $150,000 word database. It gets everybody scared. What does database mean? Database is all your contacts. Database is the name, address, phone number, email address, and background information you have on all your prospects, all your current clients, you know, all the people that you, who could possibly bring you business. And how do you organize that? And how are those all put together? Do you use things like, LinkedIn, and the database that LinkedIn is or could be for you, for gaining new prospects or people to talk to? You know, there are tools out there that allow you to take advantage of it. Are you doing that? Those are probably two really great tools, a database, a marketing plan, and then, you know, any variety of information that allows you to capture information about people who might be good prospects for you. But I think the final thing that I would offer is decide who your audience is. Who is it you're going after? You know, and now for voiceover, that can be a lot of things to a lot of people, because there are people in this chat room who do things like audiobooks. Okay. There are people who do things more like network promos or local TV affiliate promos, or there are folks who do mostly commercials and narrations. So those are for three examples of three different audiences, you know, like I lump commercial narration together. But those audiences are looking for different things, and how you market to those audiences are very different. Now, I am not anywhere close to extremely knowledgeable about how to network to audiobook publishers. However, what I do know is that it is, of all of the voiceover networking opportunity or marketing opportunities, that is the most networking focused. That is the most relationship-based marketing that I'm aware of. And I take this information from people who are much more knowledgeable about it than I am, and I'm not supposed to say that because I'm an expert, but I'm not an expert, so I can say it. these people are... The audiobook publishers want to get to know you, the voice talent. They want to visit with you at APAC. They want to talk with you. They don't want a business card thrust upon them or a demo thrust upon them. They want to develop a relationship. They want to, part of what I'm getting the sense of, and people who are more expert in this and than I can correct me, but they want to get a sense of you as the person. They want to deal with a person. When you deal with media producers who make commercials, for example, that's a different prospect altogether. They carry rosters and they want people to come to them in some way, shape, or form at the right time, at the right place, with the right voice. But and they don't want to be bothered. They don't ever want to be bothered. So that makes it so easy. But you got to bother them a little bit, and at the end of the day, they understand it. But the way you're going to approach in your marketing, and I'm talking in general sense, we're not going to drill down into all this, but in general sense, you're going to market to those two audiences very differently. But what you are going to want to remain the consistent part of that marketing, I should say, is going to be, you're going to want to be creative. Pardon me. You're going to want to be creative, and you're going to want to have a message that reflects who you are, what your point of difference is. And that's what everybody needs to kind of focus on and see what their point of difference is. And it may be in a tagline, it may be in a voice style, it may be in a, you know, it may be in a variety of things. It has to be narrowed down, and we can't figure that out tonight. But everybody's got something unique that they offer. And if you can throw it into a tagline, great. Otherwise, you have to convey that uniqueness in your website, which is obviously the front door and store for every voiceover talent, in your branding, in your marketing, and get that message out to people consistently and in a variety of creative ways. But the nice thing about our businesses, you know, we work with creative people. Even you know, in something as focused and buttoned up as medical narration, which I see Pat Sweeney is in. is in the audience tonight, and he is, you know, he's a great medical narrator. I, on the other hand, have little or no patience for it because there's a lot of syllables in a row, and there's some Latin involved, and oh my God. But he knows how to do that, and he can market himself in a way to those producers that, you know, that conveys not only professionalism, but trust and someone who's going to get the job done effectively. They're not going to have to do a 6-page script with another 20 pages worth of pronunciations for him, because he's got that worked out already.
There's a lot of doctors trying to get into that as well. And as we know, a few recovering podiatrists and doctors and stuff like that.
Some of them still working, actually. One of my clients is still an emergency room doctor, and he does medical narration. Yeah.
Even Joel Bernstein, my ear, nose, and throat doctor back in Buffalo. Wants to get in voiceover, but he wants.
Of course he does.
Why wouldn't he?
Because he's got a great voice, and that's an important part.
And a scalpel. So he has a really great voice. Yes, sir.
Yes, indeed. I've seen him use it, too.
And he has startup funds.
He does.
That's
he does.
From Dan and I.
Yes, as a matter of fact. You know, there's more than a few voice talents who do that work part-time. I mean, a lot of people are doing, you know, voiceover part-time. So their time to spend on marketing is even a little bit more limited. What marketing can they do given those limitations?
Well, the good answer is they can do marketing. That's what I would say is most important for them to understand, that they can do marketing. And I would offer up, there was a circumstance with a friend of mine some years ago, and he was having a lot of life problems. And I'll leave it at that. And he was doing his darndest to keep his business going while dealing with life problems. But he was saying to me, I don't know what to do about the marketing of my business. I'm lost here. What can I have no time. I've got this stuff. I got this life stuff I have to deal with, which was very serious. But how can I do this? And I said, well, one of the simplest things you can do is every day, just take 10 minutes if you got it. Can you spare 10 minutes? He said, yes. Yes, I can spare 10 minutes. I said, great. So my answer to you then is go get a lead. He looked at me funny. He said, what? Go get a lead? I said, yes, go get a lead. How am I going to do that? Well, I said, you can do it anywhere. But I said, one of the fastest ways you can do that is to go onto LinkedIn, and you can pick a category that you want to focus on. Say you want to focus on e-learning, and that's an area that you want to do more business in. So you go into LinkedIn and you do some searching and you figure out what job title or what business category or what type of business name you know that would have e-learning as their main focus that you don't already have in your database. And at this point, one can assume in this scenario that the database is pretty wide open, and any new lead is going to be a good lead because he doesn't have a lot in the pot. I said, do that, find that person, get as much information as you can from LinkedIn, go to the web, do some research, get an address, make sure the address is updated, see if you can find a phone number, see if you can find an email address, see if you can connect with them on LinkedIn, because if you connect with them on LinkedIn, you usually get an email address as part of that connection. And then you can add that to your database, and boom, that information is in there. Now you have contact information. Do that once a day, Monday through Friday. Then do that once a day, Monday through Friday, for 4 weeks in a month. And do that for 12 months in a year. And then tell me how many leads you have in your database now.
Hopefully a lot more.
Yeah.
Lot more. You have over 100. And if there was any math in voiceover, we'd all know. But, you know, 20 times 4 and off you go. So the whole point is you've just done marketing in the simplest, unheavy lifting way possible. You've just given yourself these new leads. Absolutely. And whether they turn out to be great leads or bad leads, you've given yourself a starting point. You've given yourself an audience to get your message out there to somebody who's a logical person to do some work with. So now you've gotten all these e-learning leads. You can, as you go along, maybe you find some extra time. You can do an email newsletter out to these folks, add them to their database, or you can just do a sales letter. and, you know, on stationery, or write them a personal note. You can get very, very niche doing that. And please, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening, the handwritten note is a wonderful marketing tool, a wonderful marketing tool. And there are, you know, there's many ways to do it. You can have cards made up, or you can have pads made up right here. And all they do is have your name on them, and you go out and you show everybody who you, you know, what your name, you know, that you have this information. You maybe put your contact information at the bottom there, and you write them a note, you throw it in an envelope. And with that,
isn't there an app for that, man? There's got to be an app for that. Please tell me there's an app.
Yeah, there's got to be an app for that. That's right. George, I'll leave it to you to find the app or start the app for that. But I'm telling you, if you do a handwritten note for that very reason that it stands out, people will go, holy cow, I just got a handwritten note from this person. You'd be surprised how much that stands out in the eyes of a producer. Like, thank you very much. I wrote a thank you note to someone I found out, I wrote it years ago, and I found out that she still has that thank you note in her office hung up. I kid you not. That's how few thank you notes she ever got.
Personal contact, very, very important. Now,
but it can't be ignored, and it always is. That's the problem.
Yeah, really. One of the things that we talk about a lot on this show, when a lot of people talking about marketing, is social media. Is social media a true marketing tool, in your opinion, or a time waste?
Not the way voiceover talents use it, no.
Yeah, really.
Because sitting on Facebook complaining about pay-to-plays is not marketing.
It's good point. I mean, there's a lot of stuff out here, you know, out in California, everybody's talking about Twitter. You know, that you've got to have a lot of Twitter hits or a lot of Twitter followers. And there are actual casting directors that are saying, well, how many Twitter followers do you have? What? What does this have to do with how good you are at what you do? Well, start gathering Twitter followers and that sort of thing. But
well, I think in that case, and specifically for casting, and I've heard about this for actors and big name actors. I mean, you're talking about the Clooney's and the Bullocks of the world. Because they, and maybe not so much them, but the next, whatever the next level down is, I'm not that first and all that, but because they want those folks to go out to their audiences and promote their movies, because now suddenly the actors can't just, you know, stand and become the character and become, you know, the face of it. They have to be the voice of it too. And so if you can't, you know, if you're up for a TV series and you're against another actor and that actor has 10,000 more followers, you know, the movie producer goes, all things being equal, they're both good looking. They can both say the alphabet out loud. Go with the one with the more Twitter followers, because we'll milk them and the followers
tiebreaker
to come in and watch the show and promote it. And that's the way they look at it. It's kind of cheesy, but that's their world now. I mean, that's how, you know, if the TV ads aren't catching people and the radio ads aren't catching people, and the web videos aren't catching people, let's catch them on Twitter, or let's catch them in all those areas.
Yep.
Which is actually not a bad marketing plan all told. You know, you got to figure out if the actor is comfortable doing that. And by and large, I think most of the actors have a team in place, and they figure out what they're going to say and hire somebody. And I don't know, you know, how much of that is real anymore. But I think to your original question, social media is a channel of it, is a channel of your marketing plan, and needs to be treated as such. But I get the distinct impression that a lot of people use their communication on Twitter and Facebook and pictures on Instagram and the like to just basically tell about their lives and really have no focus on it. There are some wonderful exceptions out there, and I will leave it to the audience to find them. But there are folks who really work social media well. But I think the idea is to have a point of view and to make sure you're using social media to the correct audience. And that's the challenge with certain social media and certain followers. If your social media feed and the people that you talk to on Twitter and the followers you have on Facebook are 99% other voiceover talents, you're doing a poor job of using social media as a marketing tool. And when I talk to people about their database and I look at that and we say things, you know, talk about whether it's Twitter or Facebook or even LinkedIn, especially LinkedIn, how many of your connections on LinkedIn are actually voiceover talents? And the answer I get from people who hire me to talk to them about marketing or performance or whatever is 90%, 85%. That number is too high because you're preaching to the choir. These are people that they maybe will hire you something or think of you for a project, but you need to get out as a voiceover talent to those people who are really making the hiring decisions, whether they be casting directors or media producers or e-learning producers or medical narration producers. Again, knowing your audience, knowing who you're going after, and being able to break those audiences down and get that message out. And we haven't even talked about advertising on the social media platforms. Right. And there's some value in that as well. Because you get things like, you know, I'll use Facebook, for example. You can, you can narrow down your message and your advertising message with your graphic to a very niche market and just hit them over and over and over. And hopefully they get to see it and do pay-per-click advertising and all the rest of it. You can do that on Google with Google AdWords as well. I've always been a little shy on Google AdWords because, anything having to do with voiceover and Google AdWords usually gets opened by other voiceover talents who aren't working.
Right.
So they just sit there, look at that, pretty. Ask somebody else. They got pretty words on the screen. I'm going to click on that. Ka-ching. And then you just wasted $2. That's and then right. Your budget for the day is blown.
If anybody has a question for Peter about marketing and you're in the chat room, throw it in there. I know Anthony is in there tonight, and he's doing a fantastic job of recording your questions and getting them to us so we can ask them of Peter and then he can make up some answer for it, which is really cool. speaking of which, one last question for you before we go to the break and go to some of the audience questions. And this is really important. Given all that you know in your significant professional experience, both with your own work and voiceover and working with other talents, I feel that your insights into this next question could really help us all on our professional journey.
Okay.
Was Ben Affleck the right choice to play Batman?
Oh, hell no. Oh, no. No. No, no. No, I'm afraid not. He was not the right guy under any circumstances. However, the guy that got to play Superman, I believe him as Superman. But
even though
nobody will ever beat Michael Keaton as Batman. I'm sorry. I just you go with the original.
I agree with
that's
that.
That's my professional opinion. Yeah. I'm a marketing guru, so I know about such things.
Important. All right. Well, again, if you got a question for Peter, throw it in the chat room, and we'll start our audience question segment in just a minute. So stay where you are. But first, we got to tell you about something.
We do?
Because, the teleprompter's not working, so I'm going to just read it off the teleprompter.
Old school.
Okay.
Put your hand to your ear.
There we go. Voiceover to GoGo. That's with a two. GoGo.com. Everything you need to be a successful voiceover artist. Dave is going to kill me talking like that. VO2GoGo.com's voiceover curriculum is a 5-time winner of Backstage Magazine's Reader's Choice Award for Best Voiceover Classes and Best Voiceover Teacher, David H. Lawrence XVII, who I had the pleasure of having some pasta with the other day, which was a lot of fun at a meetup group. It's 36 classes online or in person across a year-long course featuring not just classes in the art of voiceover, but also in the commerce and science of running your voiceover business, just like we're talking with Peter about tonight. And each month's class day includes a workout class for all participants. Now, for March, VO2GoGo students will begin a 2-month journey on how to voice fiction audiobooks, nonfiction audiobooks, and how to master recording for ACX with Audacity, and mastering your profiles and demos on ACX. Now, to get more details and sign up for the pro membership to save money at VO2GoGo.com/VOBS. Again, more details, sign up for the pro membership and save money by going to VO2GoGo.com/VOBS. VO2GoGo.com, everything you need to be a successful voice artist like me.
Very nice.
All right. Anyway, thanks, David, for helping us out here on VOBS and telling us about your great classes. Anyway, we're going to take a break right now, and we'll be right back with Peter O'Connell and your questions right after this.
Are you confused about how to set up and maintain a professional quality voiceover studio? No wonder. The information out there is mostly mythology. This is the best microphone to use. You have to have a preamp. You need a soundproof booth. This software is the best. Your audio must be broadcast quality. Consult with someone who knows the truth. Someone who's been there, in the trenches, doing voiceover for over 30 years. Someone with unparalleled experience with voiceover studios, who's worked with hundreds of voice actors and designed hundreds of personal studios. He knows how to teach and cares about your success. In one of the harshest environments known to voiceover, your home. Dan Leonard, the Home Studio Master. Separate myth from fact and get a handle on your personal voiceover studio. Contact the Home Studio Master at homevoiceoverstudio.com. Drop off a specimen of your dry audio for a free analysis.
Man, there's one show that I can't miss. It's called VOBS. And a lot of people are like, VOBS? What is that? That is BS about VO. And I love VO. How much BS is going to be in this show? There's only one way to find out, baby.
All right, we're back here on VoiceOver Body Shop. Peter O'Connell's our guest tonight, and we're talking about marketing. And speaking about marketing, I know a guy, we know a guy, a lot of people in VoiceOver know a guy who is really good at marketing. Because
I know a guy.
Yeah, I know a guy too.
He can set you up, not a problem.
Yeah. Take care of you.
But I know this guy that knows a guy who knows a guy. Anyway. This guy knows lots of guys.
Do as I ask. I will put a broken Sennheiser in your bed.
Anyway.
I didn't know Sennheiser bleeds.
That's true. Anyway, this guy we're talking about is the one and only Harlan Hogan, H2 for those of us that know him really personally. And he has a great website called voiceoveressentials.com. And why is it a great website? Because it has everything you could possibly need for voiceover. Every last item that you could use. Microphones, headphones, microphone stands, things that hold up microphone stands. And lots of books and stuff like that that works in voiceover. Also, the thing that started it all for Harlan, which was the portabooth, which he invented out of making something from those cubes you get from Target.
That's right.
And then he expanded it into an actual professional model, the Portabooth Pro. And then they came up with the Portabooth Plus with actual Oralex in it. Great for when you're on the road. A total Harlan Hogan invention. And the only place you can get those is over at voiceoveressentials.com. Go over there. And the way to go – by the way, the best way to go there – if you're watching this on our page, which you should be, you scroll down a little further, and
keep
then
going down.
You keep going down, and then you will see Harlan's picture talking into one of his portabooths. And click on that, and that will take you right to his website, and you'll see all the cool stuff that he has there, which is tons and tons of great voiceover stuff. Also, all the great books. But if you want the best stuff for voiceover, the best thing – there's his picture right there. You see it right next to Edge and my mustache and all the other sponsors that are there. By the way, if you want to sponsor the show, you can be there. It's a great place. But if you go – if you click on that, it will take you to his website. He's got microphone holders like for a 416 or maybe
That's right.
another type of shotgun mic. There's the portabooth that's the Plus, which fits right on your baggage, which is really, really cool. Mm-hmm. And lots of other cool stuff, pop screens, all sorts of things.
Yep.
So go over to voiceoveressentials.com by clicking on the link at the bottom of our page, and that will tell Harlan that we sent you, and he likes that because that's why he sponsors our show. And he's been doing it for 5 years.
That's right. This Tomorrow is officially our fifth anniversary
of working
the
together, show together. So, Harlan, happy fifth anniversary to you as well.
Thank you, man.
Oh. I didn't get you flowers or anything.
Yeah, we kept it a secret, didn't we?
Yeah, that's right. It's the 22nd of
Some
March.
Shows make a big deal out of anniversaries. We kind of downplayed it this time.
Right. If you someday we'll have
Are you
to tell this.
Are you guys going to go away together someplace? I don't
know. We're going to Anniversalope.
Yes. We'll go have Indian food somewhere.
I just made up a word. Hey,
Anniversalope?
I call trademark.
No, I heard he said it first.
Yes.
Anyway, someday we'll tell the story of our first few shows. You know, people can actually watch those on YouTube.
Yes, you can.
And you can see Peter, you know, sitting in my lap in my basement, which is things are much better now. Anyway,
that's a different video altogether. That's just a different video altogether.
Anyway, we've got a lot of great questions from our audience about marketing and stuff. And first one comes from Jimmy Sloina or Slanina.
Slanina, I think.
Slanina, okay.
He's a good dude.
Yeah, all right.
Well, you know, he's in Cirque du Soleil.
Make sure it's the correct
info. He's in Cirque du Soleil.
He's in one of the Cirque du Soleils in Vegas, man.
You just put your hand up and it just pulls you up.
It's a real deal.
All right. Anyway, question for Peter. I have been regularly cold calling production companies and ad agencies as part of my marketing efforts to varying success. My question is about follow-up. I understand that it usually takes up to 6 impressions on a lead before you're really on their radar. I've been trying to send follow-up emails to warm leads every other month, mainly announcing new jobs I've gotten and how it may relate to benefiting their business. Do you have any tips on effective warm lead follow-up techniques and campaigns?
I first of all, the follow-up is awesome, so great job on follow-up. I guess what I would say, because what was described there, if I understood it correctly, was I'm telling people about the work that I just did and trying to get them interested in that. And I understand the logic behind that, and everybody is going to probably do a little bit of that. But I would liken that to your friendly neighborhood CPA sending you out an email saying, I just finished 5 tax returns. Well, that's what you're supposed to do. You're a CPA. So
is that
what's
a humble brag?
Interesting about that? And I'm not trying to make fun of the question here.
CPA
I'm just
doing humble brags.
Exactly. Everybody does this. You know, and there's another waste of social media. I'm so busy today on my computer telling everybody about I just did this job and that job and that job. I'm so busy. Love my life. Yeah, okay, that's your job. So knock it off. You know, what you probably want to do, my opinion, and not everybody's going to agree with it, which is fine, but relate to them on a human level. But answer, if you can't do that, if you're not human, then what you want to do is say, what am I going to do that's going to make your life easier? That's my marketing message out to people.
Yeah.
What am I doing as a voice talent that will make your job as the producer easier? Make that your focus in your follow-up and in your conversation. Don't be as blatant as that. Well, if you work with me, here's how I'm going to make your job easier. Make it conversational. You know, talk to them as a person. Don't get all wound up in them as a prospect. You know, at the end of the day, people do business with friends. Now, I know it takes time to develop a friendship, so I'm not saying in your first phone call, this is going to work terribly well. You know, it's like, hi, how are you, buddy? How's the big game? You're like, what big game? I don't know. Who is this? It's going to take time for you to develop that relationship. But it's worthwhile to talk to them as a person and talk to them about, you know, I want to help your business. How can I do that? What are you looking for in a voiceover talent? How can what I do make your job easier? Start with that sort of concept and hone it, develop it, build it within your communication with them. And I think by and large, most of the time, not all of the time, because marketing is not perfect. But most of the time, you're going to find yourself working with people who want to work with you, working with a friend, at the end of the day, people want to do business with friends. And if you can do that at some level, you may not be invited to their wedding, but at some level, you become a friend of them, a professional friend. That will work better than just, you know, popping out emails about, hey, I just did this job for Deloitte, and I just did this job for, you know, another company, and boy, aren't I great? Because that's just that doesn't speak to them. People are and by the way, everybody else is doing that. So what's your point of difference? There is none. Absolutely. You know, because you have 5 great brands that you've just worked for. Jimmy down the street just got 5 great brands that he worked for. Okay.
Makes sense to me.
We're playing, you know, brand monopoly, and it's not going to work. Yeah. I don't think.
Okay. All right. Anthony asks, If someone had $100 to spend
on them, if he's managing the chat room, he can't ask a question.
Yes, he can, because he has the best questions.
Okay.
So we'll go back to his questioning. If someone had $100 to spend on their marketing, where do they spend it?
On coaching with yes. Peter.
Yeah, that's Kate. Right.
No.
O'Connell.
No. Yeah, well, I'm sorry, George, that was really the good answer. That was right. Yes.
That's the answer I give people when they ask me about mics. I go, spend it on me first.
That's right.
But anyway, yeah.
Spend on me. But actually, my answer would be take a really good prospect out to lunch or dinner.
Mm.
That's what I would spend $100 on. I really would. Because you know, you have to qualify them as that. Otherwise you can do something. You can do a lot with $100. You can create a kind of a unique direct mail campaign for a targeted amount of people. And by targeted, it could be 10 people. It could be 25 people. For $100, it's probably not going to be 500 people. But you know, you can have some impact with something creative. But see, with that amount of money, you know, you can probably take two prospects out and develop a relationship, or take a, you know, geographically if it's possible. Again, obviously, you're doing, Anthony and other people are doing work around the country and around the globe, so that's not always as easy. But I can sit here all day and come up with ideas, but one of the great old fashioned ideas is to write a note to a past prospect and who is around the world and send them a $5 or $10 Starbucks card, something along the lines of, hey, geez, I'm sorry we don't get to visit with each other. I'd love to take you out for a coffee, but have one on me anyway. And thank you so much for your past business.
Yeah, works. That works. Brilliant. Now, his follow-up on that was, what do you do for 500 and what do you do for 1,000? And that's like, then you go for the coaching for yourself.
Oh, for 1,000, you definitely call me. Okay. Yeah, for 1,000, it's
now we're talking real
me.
Money.
Yeah, now we're talking cashola. Now we're talking tuitions.
You get the next question.
All right, where is it?
If you want the full amount of money, you do have to call me because there's too many ideas. When you put it all into you put together a plan, you work at your budget, and then you sort of figure out from that plan what kind of money you really need to create something worthwhile, and then you have a plan for that money. Is the professional answer that I should give you?
All right. See, now, I have a quick story because I remember back in Buffalo, somebody was launching a cloth diaper service and they sent around as a press kit. That's another great thing. This is a great.
That's a shitty job.
It really was. And what they did is they sent out samples of their cloth diaper with chocolate kisses already in the diaper.
Oh, now, my gosh.
It was yeah! 25 years yeah! later. I still remember that. So. Anyway. Gotta be cute and unique. All right, your turn.
All right, so this one comes from Paul Stefano, and he says, will cold calling on the telephone ever truly die? Apparently, Paul doesn't like cold calling.
Cold calling is not for the faint of heart. And I think you need to be of a certain personality to do cold calling, and I don't think cold calling is for everyone. But I think cold calling can be especially effective, but it's in your presentation, it's in how you sound, and it's in your, you know, it's in your script, which shouldn't be a script. It shouldn't sound like a script. It should be so natural for you to ask the question that it just sounds like a conversation and it doesn't feel like a cold call. You know, a cold call in most people's minds listening to this or watching this is, hello, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I'm selling siding, or I'm selling encyclopedias, and boy, do I have a great deal for you. You know, and they think they have to sound like that, which is a bad way to sound, by the way. I'll buy it. Absolutely. But not one, not two, but three free pieces if you buy today. Oh, my goodness. Nobody gets a deal like this. And that's what they think cold calling is. And we also, you know, especially this time of year, when political season, when we get the robocalls, we're like, oh, God, we don't want to be bothered at home, in the office, at anywhere. But if you establish cold calling as a way of just introducing yourself, of being friendly with people, of coming up and saying something even as simple as calling a commercial studio and saying, hi, my name's Peter O'Connell. How are you? Good. My question is really easy, and I hope you can help me. I'm just interested in talking to the person or finding out more information about how to get on the voiceover roster for your studio. Is that something you can help me with?
Pretty straightforward.
Now, that wasn't painful.
No.
That wasn't, it was kind. It was straightforward. You promised not to take a lot of their time. It was conversational, and boom, usually they're going to help you. Now you're going to get somebody who's going to go, no, click. And okay, that's going to happen. Next. You're going to just get used to it. Just understand our business is 90% rejection, 99% rejection in my case, but, you know, you're going to get rejected. This is just a more immediate and louder, form of rejection. But by and large, if you're asking for a little help, people are going to help you if you didn't catch them at the worst time of their life. And they get it. As long as you're professional about it or how you approach them, they really won't have a problem with it, I don't think. But again, I think it has to be suited to your personality, and you have to come up with a short, simple request that somebody is willing to help you with, and be ready to either let that develop into a longer conversation or be polite and exit the conversation when, you know, it sounds like the person's time on the other end is up and they're done with you.
Yep. And gotta have some what we call sensory acuity about that. You know, it's like, what, you know, some people aren't really good at sensory acuity, but you got to practice that one.
Yeah.
Our good friend up in Toronto, Patrick Sweeney, asks, Peter, a while ago you decided to jump into marketing yourself.
Oh, never say.
What? Hey.
I say, never say, oh, coffee in your curd. Up in Canada, oh, yeah. Go Leafs.
Yes. Anyway, but you decided to jump into marketing and LinkedIn. How's that going, and what tactics can you share with us on how you use the site?
Oh, I've been using LinkedIn for a long time. There's a couple things that you want to do with LinkedIn, I think, and just generally speaking, the value of LinkedIn to me is that you're getting out there and you're actually seeing people who with job titles and job information. There's a lot of information on a person on LinkedIn that will allow you to better determine whether somebody is actually a decision maker for you, someone who you really need to get with on a possible project. LinkedIn has gone very well for me and has allowed me to get new business opportunities. And I use it not only for email opportunities, but also for contacting people directly. Again, it allows you to develop a database. What you do with the database and how you execute your marketing with the database is up to you and through what channels you execute that marketing. For example, if you do an email blast, that's one way because you can download emails from people on LinkedIn, although sometimes on people who have, you know, professional businesses on LinkedIn or work for companies like Warner Brothers or some network use their google.com or yahoo.com email address. You're not getting the corporate email address. So be aware that that's going to happen. But the other thing is that you can find out information and then with more digging, find a phone number and contact the person via phone, do some cold calling, send them a letter as an introductory piece, and then do a follow-up call, which to me doesn't make that a cold call after you've sent a letter or some other piece. That to me makes it a warm call because it allows you to get on the phone with them and say, hi, Pat, it's Peter O'Connell. I just wanted to follow up for a quick second on that letter I sent you. Did you get that? Terrific. You did get it. My only purpose in sending the email to you was just to see if there was an opportunity for us to work on any projects. And I wanted to know how the best way for me was to follow up with you on future projects without being a pest.
Yep.
Okay. Effective. So now you've taken that letter with one impression and you made a phone call with that. Great. That's a second impression. Hopefully it was a positive one. You got some information. Now your third impression is a thank you follow-up note to that person. And then when you leave that call, you say, you know, you've asked them how best to follow up with them and not be a pest. And then you have a fourth opportunity to follow up with them if they left the door open for that. If they said, you can follow up with me in 3 months or 6 months. And then you can, you know, so you've done the letter, you've done the call, you've done the thank you note to thank them for taking your call and summarizing the call. And then you follow up in 3 to 6 months if that's what they allow you to do. Now you've hit them four times with doing a little work on one prospect. That's a pretty good use of time as long as you've defined that prospect as someone who can really make an opportunity for you.
Yep.
Now everyone wants to go, but I want to hit thousands or hundreds of people in my database. Yeah, we all do. But, you know, emails, remember, are deletable. That's, you know, they're easy and functional, great, function great for us. But, you know, on average, everyone's getting from between a 15 to maybe a 35 or 40% open rate. And from that, what happens? You may get, you know, depending on what your offer is. And again, marketing is all about the offer, which can, you know, leads into a whole nother discussion, which probably take a whole nother hour. We won't get to that. But how are you going to get all, you know, how are you going to get these people interested in what you're saying? And once you get them, how are you going to hold them? So
what do you use for your database? What do you use for your database?
I beg your pardon? I use Google Contacts for my database and Excel. Interesting story. I have had a large database for many years. And this year, one of my marketing objectives was to go through that database. That database included my Google contacts. That database included my LinkedIn connections. And I chopped so much dead wood out of that database, you wouldn't believe. Things that I've had in there forever, but you just don't clean it out. And I wrote a blog post about it. And I think it's very important to do, and it's a very tough thing to do. It's very time consuming to do. Yeah. And it's a lot like watching paint dry, but it's very valuable if you respect the fact that your database is your bank. Your database is your money. Your database, it represents everything of financial value of your business. And it does. Your database is everything because it's your prospects and it's your clients and it's your past clients. Everything you've made money off of is in that list of names and addresses and phone numbers. So, you know, whatever CRM, which is stands for customer relationship management tool you use, is a lot like how you write your marketing plan. It is all about what works for you and what, and how you think and process information best, how, whether you do it visually, or some other way, whatever works for you is what you need to do. In the case of picking a CRM, yeah. A lot of them have the same tools. Some of them have some extra tools. And again, that's a whole nother opportunity. You can use an Excel spreadsheet. You know, it allows you to organize them by, you know, by category of job category, by geographic region, if that helps you, or by email addresses. You know, when I open up my database, you know, fully probably 30%, 30 or 40%, I had emails for. The rest of them, I didn't have emails for. So that tells me for marketing, I've got to create something in there. I have addresses for them. I've got to create some sort of marketing plan that allows me to reach out to these people either by phone or by mail to get out to them. So I'm touching my database a couple times a year.
Yep. Quick follow-up to that. LinkedIn Pro, worth it for prospecting?
I'm not an expert on LinkedIn Pro, so I would defer to others who have spent that money. The last time I spent money on LinkedIn Pro was 7 or 8 years ago. So I would not say that I would be an accurate person to talk to about that because I haven't used the new system and therefore don't feel qualified to say this is worthwhile or not. I will tell you that all the success I've had with LinkedIn thus far, I have not used LinkedIn Pro. What I know of LinkedIn Pro, one of the elements that it has that it offers that you don't get as a non-paid member of LinkedIn is to be able to see those people who have looked at your profile.
Right.
And so I think you get like 10 free ones and then they go dark. And you don't know who those people are, which I could see some value in that. And I think you get more messages and things like that with LinkedIn Pro. For me, it doesn't work. Me saying that doesn't mean that LinkedIn Pro is bad, because your marketing objectives may be different and the way you attack, that database may be different than the way I would. So you kind of need to make that decision for yourself. I can only tell you that I don't see the need to spend money on it right now, but that doesn't preclude me from doing it in the future.
Right. Okay. Now, a couple of questions here seems to be on the same topic. There was a recent blog post about the value of postcards. Do you see a difference between your suggestion of handwritten note versus a postcard? What's the difference, if any? And then Jamie Thompson had a follow-up question on that.
All right. I'll try and answer the first one shortly, and then we'll get on to Jamie's follow-up. Yes, I do. I see them both being valuable, and I can see them both being used independently and used in concert with one another. Because hopefully if somebody has, you've sent out a postcard to someone and they've called you and they just wanted some pricing on it, but you gathered any more information you needed. Say, for example, you bought a mailing list and the mailing list you bought was outside of your database. So you paid an outside agency for it. So they only gave you one use of that mailing list, and you were able to do a postcard to it, and you got name, address, and name and address. You did not get phone number. You did not get email address. So then you then enter that information after the phone call because you were smart enough to ask, oh, thank you for calling. Can I just get updated information on your records here? And do I have the correct spelling of your last name? That's terrific. And then it's Media Sound Productions. That's terrific. I got that. Now, what is the preferred mailing address? And you write that down. And then phone number and email. Fine. Then after you've answered the question or moving on, you write a quick handwritten note. Thanks for getting in touch with me. If you need anything, here's my business card. You put the note in there with the business card. Send that off, and like, what great follow-up that you get from that person. So that's the way I see them working in tangent. Postcard mailings, I'm not saying postcard, I don't ever want to make the impression that I think postcard mailings are bad. They just have to, it's all about the message. I'm also big on size. I don't do the small postcards. Some people do, and that works for them. I like something to be oversized and sit on that desk and have the best shot of being seen underneath the piles of paper.
So the follow-up is phone call, then postcard, or postcard, then phone call?
My preference is postcard, then phone call, because that gives it a warm follow-up for you, because you're calling up and saying, hey, I want to make sure you got my postcard. Some folks hadn't gotten it. You know how the mail service is. But did you get my postcard? Good. Great. Oh, yeah, that was a great postcard. That was fun. Oh, thank you very much. I worked hard on that. I appreciate your compliments. That means a lot to me. But I just wanted to follow up, if I could, for a second to see if there's an opportunity for us to work together, and how best could we arrange that. Do you have any projects coming up, by the way, that you might need a talent for or need an audition for? I'd be glad to give you a free audition of a couple lines for a script, if that helps.
All right.
Jack the goalie, his hand is hurting so bad right now, taking notes on this show, because there's tons and tons of good stuff.
Peter's great with this.
Tons.
As I mentioned in the promo, he's got more tips than a popular cotton swab company has. Let's see. Robin
for those
Rowan.
Of you hard of hearing, that's TIPS, he's saying.
Right.
I have more tips.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm clear on that.
This is a good question.
I think that's what he said.
Yeah, from Robin Rowan. I occasionally send current and former clients a link to a piece I've just done. Is that good marketing or just annoying?
It depends on the piece. No, I'm kidding. What does it sound like? I don't know. it depends. It's how you frame it. For example, let me teach you something from the book of Don't Do It the Way Peter Used to Do It years ago, where, you know, it would be an email letter that would be vomiting all the great things I did. And I only did that a little bit before I realized the error of my ways. I was too excited about the new technology. Look, emails, you can send them to everyone. And that was bad. And so, you know, if you're doing it on occasion, and it doesn't come across as, hey, aren't I great? You know, look at me. Listen to how I sound. Aren't I terrific? You know, or it's just more like, hey, I did this fun job. And here, let me tell you a little story of why I think it's fun. And oh, by the way, here's the audio for it if you want to listen to it. That's fine. And you know, if you do that once in a while, I don't think people are going to get put off by it. But if you're sending it all the time, you know, here's what I've done great, or here's what I've done new, I don't think people are going to appreciate that. Again, if you're writing as if you're writing to somebody who is a friend, and if you're writing in the tone of here's what I want to do to try and help you, or asking the question, how can I help you, or telling a funny human story, anything of those things that are not robotic, you know, they don't sound overly canned or professional. And by professional, I mean buttoned up. And so, you know, this is how we do things, and it's absolutely perfect. You're in a creative business. Show creativity is what I'm trying to get across.
One last question from Bill Lord. If there's no positive response.
Hello, Bill Lord in Washington, D.C. or Virginia, somewhere in that neighborhood.
Somewhere
you know, nothing rhymes with orange. Bill Lord taught me that.
Oh, he taught you that? I wonder where he learned it from. If there's no positive response,
yes, his name is production company.
Yes. If there's no positive response after that fourth contact, do you let it go or do you put them in a tickler file for later on? I remember this one from my life insurance days.
You grab a baseball bat and you go over to their house and you knock on the door and say, "I called you four times, you son of a." I think after four times. Put yourself in their shoes. You know, if there's been no response, leave it go. And then if you want to reach out to them in 6 months via email or something, try. Not everybody's going to be a good prospect. Here's the other side of that. You can email somebody or you can send a postcard to somebody and off you, and it's happened to me, and I know it's happened to people out there, where you send the information out to them and you don't hear back 6 months, 7 months. And then you get a phone call or you get an email address. Your postcard has been sitting on my desk and you're gobsmacked. You're like, really? Because you didn't get, you didn't respond. But that's what works. And you're not sure it's going to work for everybody. But all it has to do is work for that one person. By and large, that'll pay, that one job can often pay for the entire, for the entire direct mail campaign. Or for the entire social media ad campaign that you ran, for the entire Google AdWords campaign that you ran. Yep. Whatever that one thing is that hits that one person at that time, we want the campaign to run like McDonald's where, Burger King, hold the pickles, hold the lettuce, special orders don't upset us. And we want thousands of people to walk through our door. Well, not through our door, but to our website and come in and give us lots of business. And it just doesn't work that way. So sometimes you don't have to do the huge, big campaign of thousands of people. Sometimes the best campaigns are 20 letters this week, 10 postcards the next week, 15 calls the week after that, all to different people. But the point is you're getting out there and you're doing it. The point is you're out there and you're pulling the trigger and you're marketing and you're coming out to them with different messages and different people. And you've got it coordinated. You've got it in your database that you reached out to these people on this date. So, you're not overextending your welcome by hitting them every week or every month. I mean, you've got to figure out what works for your database. Sometimes people don't mind getting a monthly newsletter and sometimes that's too much. And you'll know when you start seeing people drop off on your email news, unsubscribe, unsubscribe, unsubscribe. You're not hitting them with what they want to know. Right. You're not hitting them or you're hitting them too frequently. Something about your message is not resonating with them. So you've got to play it by ear. It's not a perfect science.
No question.
So the answer will always be, it depends.
It depends. Well, I got to tell you, Peter, there's a lot of things I don't miss about Buffalo, like the winter and losing sports teams. But one thing I do miss is you. And all the great advice you give people.
And the feeling is mutual.
There's now the mosquitoes are coming in here or whatever that is. See, there's bugs here this time of year.
You guys moved to Minnesota? I thought this was Hollywood.
Anyway, thanks so much for being on the show. Can't wait to have you on again and can't wait to run into you at some conference somewhere. It's one of these days or whatever. Come out and visit us here in California.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Very kind.
All right. Great having you on. All righty. Well, it's time to close to the transition of the show, as the show notes say.
Or even transition to the close of the show? Either way.
Yes. What did I say?
Something like that.
Oh, okay.
Just sit back and relax. It's time for some announcements.
All right. Next week, you don't want to miss the show either. I mean, Peter was great. I mean, great information, a lot of stuff about databases and having information at your hand, which is his big thing.
These are the shows that end up having the most views and listens later on.
I know.
I'm telling you.
And I see some great essentials out of that.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, tons of them.
But next week, we have somebody who's a big star here in Hollywood. I mean, not just a star in voiceover, but just a star in television, and she's been in movies. But she's also a well-known voice across the world. The voice of Jimmy Neutron, Debbie Derryberry, is going to be right here in our studio. That's going to be
right
fun.
Over there.
Oh, when I told Jacob that she was going to be here, he was like,
"Yeah."
So She's going to be here. We're going to talk about all the stuff that she's doing. She just wrote a new book, too, called Voiceover 101.
Very nice.
Which I guess was the follow-up to Voiceover 100. But anyway, but she's going to be here for that and tell us about her book and about her career, and we'll have some fun with her. If you want to be in the audience for that, by the way, we can only have a few people. But remember, you can write to us at theguys@vobs.tv and say, I want to be in the studio.
That's right.
And then we'll draw your name out of a hat, and we'll try and get you in here. Chris, how do you draw a name out of a hat digitally?
Oh, there's an app for that.
Okay. See? It's why you're my buddy. You come up with all this great stuff. Anyway, Debbie Dairy Barrier is non next week. We need to thank our donors of the week, like Eric Aragone.
That's right. Eric Aragone never misses an episode. You're the man, Eric.
We appreciate that.
We've also had donations come in tonight recently in this order, no particular amount in order. Brian Scott Kelly. Thanks, Brian. We had one come in from Maria Macus. Yes, thank you. Another one from Joseph Harrison. There's a couple new names I love seeing come up here. A lot of these are repeats, but a few new ones too. We've also had donations come in from Paul Stefano, who was asking questions on the show tonight. Thanks, Paul. There's Eric Aragone's donation. Never misses the show. And we've also had donations come in from Shelley Avellino. We have people donating who also contribute to the running of the show. It's crazy how we do.
We really
I don't know how we pull that off. Maureen Vogel and a lot more. So thank you so much for everybody that contributes.
Yeah. So what's going on at Edge this week?
Well, Edge this week, well, tomorrow I'm teaching the Twisted Wave 201. Ooh. I've taught Twisted Wave 101 a few times, and there was definitely interest in doing some more advanced stuff. So that's tomorrow night. It unfortunately is sold out. As soon as we put a newsletter out, it sold out real quickly because we had a lot of people interested. But if you write into training at edgestudio.com, you can probably get a recording of it after the fact. So you probably won't miss out, even if you can't be in the live webinar. But that's what's coming up next. And then the week after, there's a booth camp.
All right.
From Joe Lesh. Yeah, all right. He's doing a booth camp.
And, of course, you can, like, get on their mailing list and know when these things are coming up, right?
Yeah, edgestudio.com. There's a thing on the right side to mail. Sign up on the mailing list.
Excellent. By the way, we have Instagram. Whether it does anything or not. Peter, does Instagram do anything? Who knows? Anyway.
Oh, it does many things. Many, many things. It's a beautiful source.
Okay, great. Voiceover Body Shop on Instagram. Why? We
because
don't know
we
yet.
Can. Because we have a young fan who
says, hey, you got to be
I'm
going to
make you one, and that's he right. did. So right. it's anyway, happening.
Yeah. Show logs.
George and Dan in bathing suits. We're looking forward to that.
Maybe not.
The internet again.
Show logs. Jack DeGoli is still out there in the desert writing every single word that Peter said tonight. Every syllable, every comma, it's there. So anything that he said, you'll be able to find it there.
We have the podcast version. It's on Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and anywhere you catch your pods. Just get your podcatcher and type in VOBS and you'll find us.
All right. Outstanding. And again, if you want to be in the studio for the show, we have room for hundreds of people in here, minus about 90 people to come in and watch the show live and see how we do this. It's, you know, you think we're in some big, we're in the Ryman Theater in Nashville, but no,
right.
We're in a small studio here, but it's actually pretty big.
Works nicely for us.
It's working perfectly for us. Just write to email us at theguys@vobs.tv, subject audience.
Right.
All righty. Thank our sponsors. Harlan Hogan.
Voiceover Extra.
Edge Studios, your employers.
Source Elements.
And VO2GoGo and
Ant-Man
Productions for providing uninterrupted live stream and bandwidth. Great that these people sponsor us. And
I really appreciate
hopefully
it.
They're selling all of their wares as well.
Yeah.
We'd like to thank our wives, especially Marcy, who made us dinner tonight.
Thanks, Marcy.
Yeah, usually we order out afterwards. She's like, we got some stuff. There's no kitchen in the Leonard household right now because we're remodeling the kitchen. We got lots of stuff in the freezer that works in the microwave.
Yay!
We planned ahead. And lots of paper plates as well. But thanks to her for doing that. It was delicious. Let's see. Catherine Currenden, our producer. Anthony Gettig for doing a stellar job in the chat room this evening. Jack for the show notes. And Lee Penny for the podcast. And just simply for being Lee Penny. All right. right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. We do have one segment after the show. It's not Mugman, but it's you were talking about the Can Jam yesterday.
Yeah, it's a little bit of video from Can Jam, and mostly focuses around the testing of headphones for the super geeks. Stick around for the end of the show. You'll see what I'm talking about.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for us this week. I'm Dan Leonard.
And I'm George Whittam.
And this is VoiceOver
Body Shop.
Or VO.
BS.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll see you next week with Debbie Derryberry.
Bye-bye.
Aloha.
It's George Whittam reporting for Whittam's World. Well, once in a while, there's an event that's very specific to a particular product. And this particular event is all about. It's the Can Jam SoCal Headphone Social in Costa Mesa, California, the 2016 edition. This is the first time I've ever gone. I almost missed it, but it came up on Twitter, so I had to make sure I got down here to check it out. And let's go and see what's going on in here. Headphones galore, headphones. So what are we doing with these headphones on this head? What's the head going to do?
Well, so what the head's going to do is provide a repeatable and consistent result. So, you know, we'll take this off for a second. So we have a standard human ear here. You know, you can touch it. It feels kind of freaky. And then behind the pinna, we have a IEC 711 coupler, which is a simulated human ear canal. So this head, above and beyond its, you know, obvious shape and all that, provides a standardized human being. So this guy, you know, doesn't get tired, doesn't get drunk, doesn't have a bad day. He will always provide the same objective evaluation of a system.
And then that's feeding into...
So in this case, what we have is rather than eardrums, he has a pair of measurement microphones buried inside. And those come out, and we're going into a two-channel microphone preamplifier and power supply. Coming out of that into an audio interface, which is also providing our headphone output to drive the devices of the test. And then that goes via USB to a computer running our sound check software. And the sound check software is going to drive the headphones with a test signal. And then we're going to make a quantitative measurement. And what we're doing right here is we are generating a 100 hertz signal, and here we're reading out the level at each ear, and you can see they're unbalanced, and in particular the left ear is somewhat low. And if you come look at the left ear, you'll see why, which is, look, I don't have a great seal around the ear, so I'll literally just go here and kind of jiggle this guy and see if I can get a good seal.
It's hard because it's on your own head. You know what it feels
exactly.
Right. But when you're putting on a fake head, it's a little harder. That probably means the ear cups on those are a little bit too small for a good fit. So it's doing the calculation right now?
Well,
it's doing the drawing right
actually
now?
Actually, right now it's still playing, and it's just gotten to such low frequencies that we're not hearing it anymore.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There's a wide variety, so this test is kind of optimized for resolution and accuracy instead of time. In a different environment, like a factory, you might do quite a bit longer test.
Gotcha.
Now here, technically, we should reposition the headphone.
Right.
But we're a little bit lazy, so we're just going to do it again.
Okay.
And that's still lined up, so we'll just do the measurement again. So now, are we doing it twice or three times?
Two times.
So we're measuring twice and averaging the results. And, you know, exactly as you can see, because fit is such an issue, sometimes you might reposition it five times. Sometimes you might reposition it 10 times.
Sure, right. The more data, the more accurate the...
So what we're saying is this is the frequency response that this headset would appear to give you in a diffuse field.
Interesting. And then this the dotted lines are distortion.
Distortion. And one thing to be aware of is, number one, it's a little loud in here.
Right.
And number two, because it's ratiometric, it's expressed as a percentage relative to the fundamental. Actually, pretty much any time you have a dip in the fundamental, you're going to see an increase in distortion.
So there's a $100 headphone versus a $300 headphone versus a what? How much are the RDCs? $1,500?